Health insurance exchanges are open now, as called for in the Affordable Care Act. Some of the websites ran into some technical problems, and those are in the process of being fixed. But the real danger, according to some IT professionals, is how the system can handle a potential cyber attack. Maria Hortons, founder and chief executive officer of EmiSec, and my guest on Industry Chatter today. Maria, it's great to talk to you again, as always. But let's start with just the general concept. Is securing health information different than securing other kinds of information?
That's a great question, Francis, and thank you again for inviting me. Love to talk about this subject. I think that cybersecurity and privacy are really key issues that we're going to keep seeing as we go forward. I would say the difference in protecting health information is the privacy issue and the confidentiality issue. Although it is managed in similar ways, you really want to take some due care for HIPAA security and HIPAA privacy reasons. You also want to ensure that with the sensitivity of healthcare that you really are protecting the patient doctor privileges so that individuals can get the best care.
Does that give us the privacy and security implications, give us a different kind of potential threat vector than Maria?
Well, there, I believe that it could. It doesn't mean it has to. And when we look at the threat vector, it's very enticing to look at any collection or aggregation of privacy data that can be exploited. So depending on how that data is being architected for storage, transmission, could increase or decrease that risk. So a lot of it is behind the scenes, if you will, Francis.
Yeah, and that makes it, I imagine, more challenging to build the infrastructure to architect it. Is that fair to say?
I don't know that it's more challenging. We have some really super intelligent men and women who are contributing to cybersecurity. I think that sometimes it is the complexity, the costs, and the management of those complex architectures that really makes it challenging. And it's important that we do that so that we can accomplish what we want, which is the protection of the data.
When I think about the most common types of threats that we hear about today, I can see how variations of them could be introduced into the health IT system. You know, phishing, it's real easy. Instead of asking somebody for their credit card number or password, you ask them, you spoof a healthcare provider website instead of a bank. There are pretty easy parallels to draw. Are there any kinds of threats like that that maybe we don't think of commonly that are more prevalent in the health IT sector?
I think when I look at health IT sectors and protecting that data, I don't believe that there are any threats that are more or less dangerous. I would recommend to many of my customers and to my friends that when they look at this, they really want to protect their systems by ensuring they look at setting it up from the beginning related to an intelligence-driven defense. What are people hacking today, or what are they targeting? If you know that they are targeting Java in a particular way, or Microsoft Internet Explorer, you want to be able to prioritize and look at those things first, as well as on a regular basis, to ensure that that's not really a portal of entry or the target. You also want to come back around and find out what and how long are you keeping privacy and sensitive data. Are you keeping it as it's required by certain compliance limits, or are you destroying and or archiving that data so it's less accessible to potential threats?
Are there special vulnerabilities in the health IT system as different people that collect this information consider moving to the cloud, Maria?
I think that that's a great target, Francis. I would suggest that web capabilities, web vulnerabilities, most of our future work in health IT will be through the smartphone, will be through websites where individuals want access at any time, or advisory consulting services. They're going to be more willing to use that for patient appointing, for scheduling, for discussions, or even receiving information in a limited fashion from their doctor's offices. So Microsoft Internet Explorer, other web browsers, you need to look at the cross-site scripting, all very technical terms, but it means that you need to do those testing, compliance, and other architectural capabilities first before you go live.
Maria Horton of EmmySec is my guest. The mobile implications there are incredible because we have a proliferation of devices. We have a proliferation of operating systems, not to mention the browsers that you're talking about. So in thinking about all of those, securing all of those various, or defending in all of those various environments, strikes me that it's a lot more like a mosaic than it used to be.
Absolutely, and that's terrific terminology. I think that what we are going to see are specialized services kind of segmented so that you might have smartphone users that are kind of encouraged to use a certain venue, if you will. And you may even see, as we try to use websites to allow everyone the device of choice, we might see on the back end of that some additional segmentation to protect how it's entered or from the location that it's entered. We also will have some PII data related to geolocation. So as we're looking at some things, there may be some additional sensitivities that as we go further along this, we may have to either collect or protect.
Your observation about the device agnosticism element of this, I think, is particularly interesting because that's a dramatic shift from how this conversation was occurring 2 years ago. People were focused on the idea of apps. And, well, we can just build an app and we can ensure that the app stays secure. And, you know, with Apple, it's a matter of if it's not secure, it can't even get into the App Store. And people were hopeful for an Android solution that's similar. And that's not even really part of the conversation anymore because of what you're talking about, especially in the federal space where agencies really do want to be device agnostic.
I think you have to be. Because you can't dictate to the individual citizen how they're going to access a health IT service or any service for that matter. And I also think that it gives us longevity. One of the things that we're seeing from our government customers is we need increasing value. To enhance value, you have to have some ability to create longevity and return on investment. You can't do that if you are customizing to the extent that you have to make ongoing new rollouts. You have to have some element of what I would call a standardization or a template framework.
Is there an intersection between the issues that we're talking about and the budget situation the government finds itself in, Maria?
Absolutely, Francis. I think budget creates for many of the federal CIOs and the commercial CIOs conflicting challenges. Each are facing budgetary constraints in different ways. They're facing staffing constraints. Those who have the sophisticated skills to do this, along with the fact that they are kind of forced into or using somewhat older models of acquisition, older models of hiring practices, different things. So I think as we go forward in any of these new health IT challenges and new IT mobile and cloud initiatives, we are seeing folks who are dealing and adapting to new capabilities using the best of what we've had previously for acquisition, implementation, measurement, and monitoring.
Maria Horton's my guest. She's founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec and the former chief information officer at the National Naval Medical Center. And we'll continue our conversation on securing health IT when we come back in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Industry Chatter today with Maria Horton, the founder and chief executive officer of EMISEC and former chief information officer at the National Naval Medical Center. And we're talking about securing health IT systems and data. And Maria, we've talked about where we stand today. I'd like to be a little bit anticipatory, if that's even possible. Is this an area that is as difficult or maybe more difficult to predict how it will break in the future than other types of IT security and protection?
For the most part, Francis, I think it has a little bit of nuance to it. When I look at securing health IT in the future, we don't know what we don't know related to how folks are going to seek health care. We also are faced with changes in healthcare research, how individuals use their medical care, how they want to use it. So I would look at the VA and some of its stronger initiatives in moving forward to be more veteran-centric and look at its beneficiaries. I would look at individuals who are seeking, again, back to mobile, seeking health care and appointments and capabilities that make their lives convenient. Those have been the big pluses in health IT, and they're the things that incorporate elements of privacy but benefit the most from technology in lowering the costs.
The part of that that sounds like potentially the biggest wild card, Maria, is how consumers want to use the tools and technology that are available to them, because 2 years ago, 5 years ago, certainly nobody would have predicted the mobile revolution. Here it is on us, and of course we have no idea what it'll look like in 2 or 5 years from now.
I agree, and I think that's compounded by the interest in the millennials and very tech-savvy older folks. I hate to use that terminology because we're all getting there, but everyone uses their smartphones and their tablets and their capabilities in different scenarios. And as we go to improving broadband capabilities, even in rural settings, we're going to see changes in consumerism.
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish, but that's a great point.
I think we'll also see that as healthcare evolves, when we look at the customization and personalization of healthcare related to the genome, how DNA factors into so many things, I think that too will unfold slightly differently. And it too has implications for privacy, confidentiality, the ability to retrieve information over a long period of time.
The anticipatory remark that I made at the beginning of our conversation was exactly directed toward the kind of thing that you mentioned about the availability of broadband in places where it isn't available now, because those are the kinds of things that we can predict that it's coming, but we can't necessarily predict the spread, and we can't predict the pervasiveness when it is readily available. So those are the kinds of variables that I was getting to. Given the unpredictability of it, how do you think about, from a government perspective, building an infrastructure that's flexible enough that you can add the pieces that you need to but maintain the security level that you need to moving forward?
Excellent question. I would say that that's one of the reasons that EMISEC is a 3PAO for the FedRAMP program. We're really big supporters of cloud usage because we think that adaptability and flexibility gives benefits to not only the users but the buyers of those types of services. It allows you to change more quickly. I think as we go further into cloud and mobile usage, legacy and legacy migration issues, which have been talked about in the IT world for 10, 20 years, will tend to be minimized, because as we transition, those things will go away and we will come into a new way of dealing with IT issues.
The legacy migration issue, you and I have talked about that before, not necessarily mm-hmm. just in the health IT sector, but across government in particular, and the issues that agencies have in demonstrating ROI and keeping legacy systems going as opposed to moving to not just a cloud-based solution, although that's a big help. What will drive the legacy migration, easiness that you're describing there? Is it just the fact that the technology exists, or will there be another chain of events that you think will push that?
I think your question your question to me about budgetary reasons and adaptability, even changes in staffing, if we have a limited number of sophisticated developers, coders, even security experts, their ability to work on multiple projects for multiple locations and organizations is enhanced. When I look out to the future, I see many things in a state of flux today. Staffing, cloud issues, mobile issues, security issues, because we are all experiencing transformation almost simultaneously, and each is impacting the other. So what we find out beyond that and how it's going to work is going to be a little bit different. We're going to have to be creative. We're going to have to remember what we've done previously, but we're going to have to employ new methods of execution, if you will.
Maria Horton is the founder and chief executive officer at EmmySec, my guest on Industry Chatter today. You have the unique position of being an industry leader now and a former federal technology leader when you were the CIO at NIMIC. When you look at it from both perspectives, a lot of the things that you just pointed out are centered around a concept of uncertainty. We don't know what things will look like at certain points in the future. Is that the new normal? Is the fact that we're in some cases at the whims of consumers' wishes? Does that mean we have to just think about all of this stuff differently than we ever have before?
We do, Francis, but I would like to change the framework. A lot of folks express consternation or concern and worry about the unknown. I prefer to look at it as opportunity, and it gives you, each of the individuals involved in this, from business and leadership through IT, a chance to paint new visions, employ them, and actually do things that are really great. And so for me, it's a very optimistic type look at the world is changing. Can I participate? What can I contribute to the value?
Okay, and so we come to one of my favorite words in the universe, which is value. Who are the people inside an organization, whether it's a government organization or a company like yours, that are going to add value to the end user, regardless of how he wants to use the system, in the coming months, years, whatever?
I think you're going to see that on a couple different levels. I think the security experts who can help with the convenience and protect privacy are going to be huge value brokers. I think the mobile apps developers, even though they may move away from mobile apps, will still have a play in how things are coming out. We're certainly not going to lose apps. There's new ones generated every day, but they may reuse older app capabilities with new ones, even when you look at gamification and some of the other capabilities. So those developers are going to help us not only with employing better code, but in creativity of how we might use applications for additional value. I think from the business and leadership perspective, we are seeing changes in the way individuals evaluate not only what used to be called the total cost of ownership or capital investments, but the expenditures of dollars for the most productivity or efficiency. So I see value in different areas. I think that we have to encourage people throughout the organizational chain of command to each contribute to that. I try to take a broader view.
You use a word that I have started to see a lot more, especially thinking about the customer's perspective when federal thought leaders are talking about how they're going to serve citizens, and that's gamification. Give me like a 30 or 60 second thumbnail, if you can, of what that concept is and how then beyond that, how that might apply in the health IT space.
There are some great topics on gamification, but to simplify it is that most individuals, no matter what age they are, enjoy testing their own skills either against themselves or against another. It's the reason our children and teenagers play video games or home video games. I think it's employing that type of technology and mind think to accomplish more difficult and complex problems. And we're seeing this online. We're seeing it in discovery, certainly in the cloud, as people go out and are asked to participate in focus groups where they are said, hey, how can you contribute to solving this problem? If you do, you win a Farmville credit or something to that effect. So it is getting people to have fun while they're accomplishing problems and solutions.
And where do you see that being applicable moving forward in the space that we're talking about today?
In health IT?
Yeah.
I would say one of the easy ones might be nutrition. You know, we talk a lot about having individuals feel better if they eat and exercise and do well. There is potential for gamification right there, not only from a training perspective, but just from a guidance and assistance perspective for those individuals who may have short-term or chronic diseases.
Maria, I have a ton more here I'd like to cover with you, and I'm out of time, but it's always wonderful to have you on the program. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you very much, Francis. I look forward to seeing you and talking with you again sometime.
We'll do it. Maria Horton's the founder and chief executive officer at EMISEC and the former chief information officer at the National Naval Medical Center.